Welcome to Women in Politics, recorded here in the studios of WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond's independent radio. I'm Carol Olson, your host for Women in Politics. It's a platform to bring women together to talk about their engagement in politics, what's important to them in our community, and what they want our representatives and delegates to hear. And on today's Women in Politics, we have Kelly DuLaCia. She's a Democrat from Yorktown running for Virginia House of Delegates District 96. And we have Delegate Marcia Price, representing the 95th District in Virginia House of Delegates. Okay, welcome and thanks for coming in to Women in Politics.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
First, do both of you want to talk a little bit about what brought you into politics and how you got here?
Sure, I can start. So I was born into a political family. And so my first political activity was licking envelopes for my uncle when he was running for office when I was 3 years old and finally tall enough to sit at the table with the adults. And then I have worked on campaigns for my family members. And I always thought that I was going to stay behind the scenes, but the opportunity became available for me to run. And I actually showed up for what I thought was going to be a job interview for campaign manager when my predecessor announced that she was retiring. And the room actually kind of turned out to be like, no, it's your time. You know, it's your turn and we want you to run. So that's how it went from campaign staff to actual candidate. But I think once I decided that this was the right move, I just knew that my voice was needed in certain spheres. Looking at the composition of the General Assembly and how some of the conversations did not include all of the lived experiences, especially from my district, I knew that I could be a loud and important voice at the table when decisions were being made.
And for you running in the 95th district, what does that encompass?
It is parts of Newport News and Hampton. It is one of the most gerrymandered districts, so it's largely African-American and Democrat. And there are parts and neighborhoods of my district where the average median income is $19,000 for a year. So you have that, but then you also have middle-class affluent families who are like fourth-generation college. And so it's a very diverse district, even though it's mostly African-American. So balancing the different needs for those experiences and the shared common ground. So it's been interesting, you know, to learn about, you know, all of the different benefits and just resources and great things that are happening in the 95th district, but also some very serious concerns and needs, especially in this political climate.
And Kelly, what about you?
Well, I do not come from a political family other than all of my family members having very strong political opinions. So for me, my engagement really has been lifelong. I have a degree in public management, and most recently, this presidential cycle has activated me in a new way and been a catalyst for me that's propelled me into politics at this level. After the election, I really started looking to see where I could make a meaningful impact. And after a lot of research and a lot of conversations, running for delegate against our Republican incumbent seemed like the best place for me to plug in.
Here on this show, we talk about the engagement of women in politics and looking at the current political environment and how the country is actively changing, and women are stepping forward to run and be active in you know, much larger percentages than ever before. And looking back at Virginia, which has really small percentage of women overall in politics, if I'm correct, it's like 20% or less.
Mm-hmm. 17 out of 100.
It's even worse than I thought. Mm-hmm. Did any of that lead you to wanting to have your voice heard as women, or was any of that part of you being engaged in what's happening in politics now?
Well, for me, I can say that was a big part of why I felt such a strong urge to stand up now. There really is a great threat, I think, towards a rollback of some of the gains that we've made, and I am just not willing to be a bystander.
So I think for me, because I ran for the first time 2 years ago, so I think it was more of a deterrent, you know, knowing that there were only a few out of 100 that looked like me or thought like me or had a life that looked anything like mine. And actually looking at it, there really isn't another woman that has my walk. And I'm single. I don't have kids. I didn't have a visual model. Like, I had some internalized things that I needed to deal with. When I closed my eyes and I imagined, what does a delegate look like? I didn't see me yet. And so I had to work through that and know, no, you you do belong there and people need you there, you know, to fight for them. So I kind of had to overcome that and say, okay, yes, they need more women, more perspectives, and more diversity at the table. But I'll tell you, just knowing how hard women have had it in this, you know, realm, you got to know what you're getting into, you know. And so I commend Kelly because there's a little bit of insanity that it takes to just jump into something that you know is a network that does not welcome you. Like, they may tolerate you, but not necessarily welcome you. And it's hard, and you deal with it every day, you know, every single day. So I'm just glad that there are more women this year that have overcome that and known they can do it. It's going to be a hard fight, but it's necessary.
And I can certainly identify with not being able to see that mirror image role model in the General Assembly. If I'm elected, I'll be the first lesbian ever in the General Assembly. And also, I have two small sons. We just had twins this past year. And while there are others with small children, there are not many mothers with small children in the General Assembly. So I'm certainly eager to take on the challenge and find the solutions to being a little bit of a newcomer in more than one way.
Overall in politics, you know, women being underrepresented and African Americans being underrepresented, as well as other people of color. And then contrasting that with, we made some gains in the previous president under Obama for the last 8 years. This current administration had run on a very anti-woman and racist campaign. How do you feel about that as women representing minorities, both of you?
I mean, not even just myself, but just looking at what even like the proposed budget would do to a district like mine, and not even just the numbers, but looking at actual lives, actual families, children who may not be able to really live out their dreams like we tell them they can be anything, but without that opportunity and without that exposure in the public education system, it just couldn't happen, right? And then you look at like, oh, and then the air they breathe. Like, so it's like all of these things coming together in such an intersectional way, and it feels like an attack on the people that you know, love, and represent.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Women in Politics, broadcast on WRIR 97.3 FM. Now back to our show.
And so for me, it invigorates me. It keeps me up at night. It keeps me fighting, trying to do everything that I can. And, you know, it's a limited role that you can play as, or that I can play as delegate. So the other part that it has spurred me to do is get my community more active and to teach what civics looks like so you can know the system in order to change the system and really to help turn that anger and energy and fear into electoral power, like showing up at all of the elections, running for office yourself, showing up at school board meetings and city council meetings and coming to Richmond. You know, we've been able to turn those negative emotions and instead of letting it paralyze us, really let it be the energy that feeds us in our fight.
Absolutely. I think I'm not sure if I'm 100% correct on these numbers, but this year we have 109 Democratic challengers and incumbents running, and almost 50% of those are women this year. And that is a historic number of women that I'm really proud to have joined the ranks. So there is a lot of progress that we're seeing, but there are also some pretty backwards things that are going on. And while the Republicans voted down the bathroom rule this year, they immediately turned around and also voted down the rule that would have created legislation against being able to discriminate against the LGBT community in housing and employment. And so those are areas where we need to move the ball forward, and we're not going to do that unless we change the makeup of the General Assembly.
Absolutely.
Do you feel, in talking about that bill in particular, the ability to discriminate who you serve is what you're talking about, what do you think the future of that kind of bill, what future doors does that open up? There are people who talk about it as allowing state-sanctioned discrimination. Do you feel like that it will morph beyond one group and start to encompass other groups?
I mean, absolutely. It's a slippery slope. Whenever you're trying to legislate hate for one group, any group is susceptible to that sort of thinking. And, you know, I don't want Virginia to get too comfortable, because last year we did pass that, but it was thank you to the governor that that vetoed the bill, and
absolutely,
we were able to sustain the veto. So it's not like, oh, Virginia's not North Carolina. No, we are. You know, we just happened to have, at the time the bill was passed, a Democratic governor who stands for equality. It is scary when you look at the Muslim ban. Christians should not be okay with that, because if it was somebody else in power that wanted to persecute us, it could be us. So if you see injustice and you see inequality, it should stir something in you to want to fix it. And if it doesn't stir that in you, please go sit down, because it stirs it in others. And we're trying to fight for the equality and to make Virginia open and welcoming to all. And so I think there are important elections this year, but what the composition of the General Assembly looks like is very important to the messages that we send to Virginians, or how we feel about equality and matters of justice. And a lot of people that I talk to assume that there are protections for the LGBT community, just assume that the laws extend. But to know that you can get fired from your job for who you love in Virginia in 2017 is just mind-boggling. And so we've got to continue to fight those types of things.
Yeah. And when you look at some of the potential impacts of that, in addition to how that could spread into other groups, in addition to it being a very slippery slope, we are all, as legislators and citizens of Virginia, always having our eye on the ball in terms of economic stability and economic growth. And when you have a large class of your society that has that type of instability in their employment, that does not move us forward. That does not create stability in our economy. And that's always an area that we're looking to stabilize and grow. So there are serious economic impacts when you allow discrimination in the workforce.
How cohesive is the Democratic Party now? Now that we have more women coming in, and a lot of it is certainly in reaction to where our country's going right now, but also there are comments that are out there in the internet that the Democratic Party is really not that different from the Republican Party, and that it squishes voices down to one. Do you feel like, as the party that is supposed to represent diversity, that you still allow diverse voices within your party, in everywhere from Green Party liberals to Blue Dog liberals to moderates? Do you encompass all of that?
I can speak to that as a newcomer, I think, and Sia can probably speak to that as somebody who has been to Richmond and seen it from that angle. But perhaps there was a leg to stand on with that complaint in the past. But this year, we are seeing people come forward from all walks of life. And we're seeing the democratic process really function as it should. We have many races with primaries, with strong candidates, multiple strong candidates running in the same primaries. We have more democratic challengers than we've had in recent memory. And so there are a lot of voices. There are very progressive, and there are very centrist Democrats. And I think we're really seeing the full range, the full scope of opinions and philosophies and legislative preferences. And for me, that's very exciting to be a part of that.
And I think, you know what, you know, we often forget that politicians are people, and we come to the table with our own stuff. And I think what's important for me is being at the table to be a voice that calls out some of that stuff that may not have been called out before. So when we disrupt the status quo to be, okay, well, you know, we say we're inclusive in our votes, we need to be inclusive in our language, or, you know, well, here's my perspective on why that bill is horrible because of this unintended consequence in my district. And so I think one of the strengths is that we welcome the conversation and we duke it out and we hash it out. I recently signed on to a letter from Black women electeds from Congress down to the local level and some community leaders. And it was to the DNC asking for them to take very seriously Black women voters. Like, we haven't had that same audience that some other groups have had with our leadership in the party. And so it's like, I love my party. I've been a Democrat all of my life. But if I feel like I'm not being welcomed in this space, I'm going to let you know that and feel that. And so we're hoping, you know, that the response will be positive. But I think I have that freedom and I have that ability to be genuinely myself and fight for my constituents because of the welcoming of diverse voices.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Women in Politics, broadcast on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond's independent radio. On today's show, we have Kelly Dulacchia. She's a Democrat from Yorktown running for Virginia House of Delegates District 96. And we have Delegate Marcia Price, representing the 95th District in Virginia House of Delegates. Now back to our show.
Absolutely. And I think it's a natural part of the process that you foster the environment for that very lively discussion. And then you have to, as a party, being on the same team, you have to come out of that not necessarily with a homogenous viewpoint, but with a shared objective so that you can have progress, so that you can get legislation passed. You have to eventually come to a consensus.
Some of the issues that have divided the parties, one of them is very central to women, which is reproductive health. How do you feel about those issues, and how do you think you can work with women of any party to address some of those concerns?
I mean, I absolutely struggle with that. So when some of my political idols were talking about putting lots of resources behind candidates that did not embrace pro-choice values, I definitely struggle with that. I consider myself to be very progressive. And so when progressive organizations want to support that, I'm like, okay, so we're going to shut down a conversation if anybody says that they might be for the pipeline, but we're going to be able to, you know, have this compromise over the autonomy over a woman's body. Like, that's very dangerous to me. And it sounds very regressive for some of the progress that we've made, especially in the last 8 years. And I think the danger even further is that some of the candidates may become lax in their fight for the movement. And so I look at the organizations that I've been working with, and I think it's a real concern. And while I do want diversity, it's still that's a very fundamental right, you know, that is not negotiable for me. And so I think that consensus is important, compromise is important, but I think we all have that list of non-negotiables.
Absolutely. And I think that's something we're both pretty non-negotiable on. You know, just to tag on to that, I think a big root of the problem that we're seeing with not moving forward on pro-choice legislation and protections for women to have decision-making ability over their own bodies is that we don't have equal representation of women in decision-making positions. And to take that a step further, I think part of that has to do with the fact that we still don't have equal pay for equal work. And when people are struggling to pay their bills, it makes it difficult to become civically engaged in the way that we need women to be.
Absolutely.
Do you think that this could be a bridge with Republican women, talking about healthcare autonomy and reproductive rights?
Well, you know, I think that one of the perspectives that I have gained, you know, being in Richmond, is that literally and truly about 80% of the work that we do doesn't end up in the newspaper because it is regular business, is things that we all agree on. The majority of our bills pass with votes of 80 or more votes. And so there aren't these social issues. And then the 20% pops up. It's the loud, ugly fights in committee. It's what ends up on YouTube and newspaper articles. But, you know, like I said, it's just very hard to compromise on this issue. And so consensus is hard. It's definitely hard for me. So instead of utilizing my time and energy and trying to build consensus on the things where I know that the women that are in the legislature are divided on, I choose to maybe pick something else, you know, where it might be, instead of reproductive health, it might be other access to health or speaking up. Like one of the women on the other side is actually in healthcare. She's a provider. And so we were able to come together and have great bipartisanship on some of the bills that she put through that help women, but it just may not be on reproductive health. So I'm not giving up my dream, not giving up my fight, not giving up my values, but utilizing my time wisely because I already know where she stands and she knows where I stand. And so it becomes this like, well, they didn't send me here to throw a protest. They sent me here to get some things done and to bring those resources back home. And so while I will participate in those protests, that's not necessarily my role when I'm in the General Assembly.
Yeah. And I think Ralph Northam said it best when he said, if you can't change their mind, you have to change their seats. And I also think sometimes there are ways to work around problems to affect change through things that move us forward and permeate change at different levels than maybe what the specific legislation intends or lays out. And specifically, you know, going back to equal pay for equal work, as that takes effect, if we can accomplish some progress there and continue to, I mean, we have to raise the minimum wage. And when you raise the floor, you're going to raise it for everybody. And that's going to create that equal pay that we're looking for, which I think will trickle down or trickle up to allowing more engagement with women. And as we get more women in those decision-making seats, we're going to see the legislation reflect how most women feel. I think the majority of Virginians feel strongly about pro-choice.
And it we would be remiss if we didn't also mention gerrymander districts at this point in time when we're talking about, you know, like something that is polling upwards of 70% to 80% that people are in favor of, but the legislation coming out, you know, negatively impacting these things. And you look at the party that holds the top five statewide offices, yet, you know, we look at these red districts. And so fair and independent redistricting has to be a part of all of the fights for these issues, for raising minimum wage, for, you know, pro-choice, reproductive rights, access to healthcare, Medicaid expansion, all of these things that are polling that Virginians are saying, yes, please, you know, but we continue to pass legislation against it.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Women in Politics, broadcast on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond's Independent Radio. On today's show, we have Kelly DuLaccia. She's a Democrat from Yorktown running for Virginia House of Delegates District 96. And we have Delegate Marcia Price, representing the 95th District in Virginia House of Delegates. Now back to our show. How do you see the party moving toward fixing gerrymandering? I know you have some plans to go forward to in lawsuits. How's that going?
I think it is going to have to go to the courts. Yeah. When you have such a heavily weighted General Assembly who really have been the beneficiaries of the way the lines are drawn, which was the intention, of course, I don't think we're going to see the solution come from Republicans just having a change in their conscience. I think it's going to have to come from the courts.
Yeah, that was one of the biggest fights for me. I sit on the Privileges and Elections Committee, and so it came before us. And just, you know, some of the strategy and the tricks and the, you know, games and everything, it was just, you know, you have 100 people sitting behind me while I'm presenting my constitutional amendment that would give it back to the voters. Let the voters tell you that they want fair and independent redistricting. And so when that dies in your subcommittee or committee, it's demoralizing, but it also enraged enough people for organizations like One Virginia 2021 to have like a 15% increase in their membership, because people understand how important this issue is. And it is just so heartwarming to go back to my district and people know what gerrymandering is. You know, it wasn't like that a couple of years ago. And so I think from good work from community organizations, I think that there is enough political pressure for this to become a big deal, if even if the courts fix this round of it, but to keep it independent and keep it fair and not oscillate, you know, just depending on who's in charge.
Mm-hmm. In looking at education, and we have a new director of education with really little experience in education itself. How do you feel like the policies that she's changing are going to trickle down to your communities? And what are the pros and cons of what's going to happen?
I think this idea of a voucher system is going to be a catastrophe. And education is one of my three legs of my stool, if you want to phrase it that way, and specifically going to Richmond to fight the expansion of a voucher system. It will absolutely decimate funding for public schools. And an easy way to explain it for a layperson is that when you take a student out and the money that supposedly is spent on that student, you don't in any way reduce the cost for educating all the other kids that are left in the class. So you have less resources to do the same job. And as you allow that to increase and more students who can afford to supplement the voucher and pay the difference between the voucher and their tuition, you're basically going to have your lower middle class and your lower class left behind without the resources to do the job. And to me, that is unethical and unacceptable.
Yeah, it's in the Virginia Constitution that we're supposed to provide education, a quality education. So coming from the federal, just thinking about my district, whether it's after school programs or whether it's STEM opportunities for girls, like just some of the cuts are just ridiculous. They're targeted and they're cruel. And it's just like, why? Like, you can't spend time on the why. You have to spend time on the fight. And it's just like, okay, so for me, I want to ask, okay, what is education? Like, what is the purpose of education? And so when I come to the table, the purpose of education is so our kids can live out their dreams. It's the greatest equalizer for opportunity through exposure and learning and development, but then also for your workforce. So if we're not going to have an educated workforce, our economy is going to be trash, you know? And I'm like, this is where I was born and raised. I had an amazing public school education. I am the product of public school. And I'm not saying I'm the most successful, you know, but I've gotten to where I am because of being taught how to think, how to question, how to just go out there. And then add that with my secondary education, and just my life is better because of my experience in Newport News Public Schools. And I can say that definitively. So to think that that opportunity might be taken away is just so replaced with what? You know, and replace with what pathway to success? And are you saying that you don't want certain kids to be successful? And I don't want to believe that. But when I'm looking at your numbers, that's the message that you're sending. And so, unfortunately, the Secretary of Education was not able or chose not to answer some of these questions when she was being grilled. And so for me, that makes it like Kelly and I, like the fight is even stronger because now we have to be that firewall in Virginia. And we have to be the ones that fight, you know what, I may not be able to fight for all kids, but I'm gonna fight for Virginia kids and to make sure that they have that equal access to opportunity.
Yeah, and part of the problem really stemming from the top is the choice to place completely unqualified people into these positions. And I think some of the questions she didn't answer because she knew she would paint herself into a corner. And others, I think she genuinely did not know the answer to the question. And that's alarming. Our kids deserve better. I, too, am a product of the community that I grew up in York County. And the 96th District, we take great pride in the quality of our public educations. We have some fantastic public schools, and we need to preserve the quality of the experience that our kids are having. And that is what that base of a good education and a sound preparation to join the workforce or to move on into higher education, that's what creates upward mobility. And that's what the American dream is supposed to be about.
This ends the first part of our interview with candidate for Delegate Kelly DeLucia and Delegate Marcia Price. Tune in next week for part two. You've been listening to Women in Politics, recorded here in the studios of WRIR-LP 97.3 FM. To hear this show, please go to our blog at womenpoliticsva.blog. To support independent radio, to learn, volunteer, or donate, please go to wrir.org.